Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RT Radio 1.
That's Ava, age 3. Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon, 51551, ray@rte.ie. Would you like to do a little bit of a dance? Huh? Would you? Go on. Now, not if you're driving, but if you're in the kitchen or you're out in the garden or you're in a position that you're vertical and you can have a little bit of a dance. Go on. Here we go. You got it. Just a bit of a shuffle. Woo. Looking good. Ah, yeah. Now, do you feel better? You should. You should. There's scientific proof that you should feel better mentally and physically after a dance. And Dr. Peter Lovett is on after 4 o'clock. He's called Dr. Dance. You might have seen him on Britain's Got Talent. He has a unique CV in that he trained to be a professional ballet dancer and was a professional dancer. And then he gave that up and he went back, and he had learning difficulties when he was at school, went back to college, studied psychology, became an experimental psychologist, and he decided to marry his two interests, psychology and dance. And then he's done groundbreaking research on dance and Parkinson's disease and the benefits of dance and how it works and how the brain works when we're dancing. And so he's coming on at 4 o'clock. So I just thought I'd play that for you. Get you in the mood, get you limbered up, get you moving. And he even has advice for people who say, I can't dance. No, no. Two left feet, can't dance. And you become very self-conscious. And I know people like that. And even with the lubrication of alcohol, they still can't dance. Well, he has a way of getting yourself dance ready, dance floor ready, when we can be back on the dance floor. And it starts easy peasy, lying down on your back and then imagining yourself dancing. Anyway, he'll talk you through it after 4 o'clock. Good news, maybe, I don't know, from Japan. The Olympic torch relay has begun in Japan, in Fukushima. And that's the area that was hit by the earthquake back in 2011. And 10,000 runners will take part in the four-month relay, which will go through all of Japan's 47 areas, or prefectures, as they call them. Polls in Japan suggest that the majority of Japanese people are against the Olympics being held as scheduled because of the pandemic. They haven't been badly hit by it. 9,000 people have died of the coronavirus, and you're saying that's a lot of people. But compare that to the population of Japan, which is 126.5 million. So per capita, they've done really well. Although Tokyo reported 420 cases yesterday, and that's the highest single day figure this month. I suppose it's an act of defiance. They're calling it the Recovery Olympics. I suppose a nod to the disaster that I mentioned in Fukushima in 2011, and also a nod to the pandemic. And I suppose people want it to happen. They desperately want it to happen as a symbol, a beacon of hope, global beacon of hope. We're back, business as usual. We're running, we're jumping, we're swimming. But if it's not to be, it's not to be. And you are bringing all of these people from all over the world into a confined area. And despite your best efforts and the best security, something's going to happen. It's going to spread. Anyway, that's the story on the Olympics. Thought you'd be interested in that. Gillian McNulty, who we spoke to recently, celebrates her 45th birthday today, which is big news. And she was tweeting there, 45 years defying doctors. I was given a 4 to 5 year life expectancy. So safe to say, I'm a stubborn little ass. And you know Gillian, she has cystic fibrosis. And she's 45. And she says, I think I can officially say I'm a geriatric cystic fibrosis person. Happy birthday, Gillian. Keep her lit, as they say down the country. Shane Hegarty, you know Shane. We like just dipping into people's Twitter accounts. And Shane posted a piece of toast on his Twitter account today, and you would say, why oh why would you be interested in that, Ray? Well, if you see it, you'll know why, because it looks exactly like a map of Ireland. There it is. I think it's, is that butter or cheese he has on it? Anyway, it doesn't matter. It looks like a map of Ireland. And so congratulations, Shane, on getting a piece of toast that looks like a map of Ireland. And somebody else was saying on Twitter, if you followed your childhood dream job, what would you be right now? That's a good question, isn't it? And this person, Cassidy, says, I'd be a marine biologist that specialises in orca whales. I'd be a doctor. If I followed my childhood dream, I'd be a doctor. You don't know, do you? You would have made a great doctor. I don't know, would I? I don't know if I would have been up for it. But that was my childhood dream from the age of 10. When I was about 7, I wanted to be a priest. And then I elbowed that idea. Then 10, from 10 on to my leave insert and getting my results, I thought I wanted to be a doctor. It didn't work out for me. So I'd be a busy man now. Could be a consultant. What would I be? Would it be a surgeon? Would it be a neurosurgeon, neuroscientist? Whatever. I don't know. But that's, what would you, what was your childhood dream and what would you be now if it came to pass? Avril was on. We were talking yesterday about Lemmy, him being the now deceased lead singer of Motorhead, and he got cremated and he put his ashes into gold bullets, and his family distributed them to friends and family and as a nice memento of the late Lemmy. And we were talking about cremation and ashes and what would you do with your ashes, and got a good old conversation going yesterday at 51551. Well, Avril has been on to us. She says, hi Ray, I'm Avril from Memories Forever by Avril, and I make memory cushions, quilts, teddies from people's clothes who have passed away, and I have put ashes into teddies and cushions from loved ones. That's Avril. So Avril from Memories Forever by Avril. So she makes quilts out of people's clothes, loved ones who've died, and then they're always there for you. Nice idea, Avril. Memories Forever by Avril. And delighted to give you a mention there today. Deirdre says, could you please wish your daughter living in Inishfil, Ontario, Canada, a happy birthday for today, 25th. In the past year, she gave birth to her first baby, Killian Brendan, in June, and moved into their first house. Our visit to Canada and that of our other grandparents had to be cancelled due to COVID-19. We were all very sad about this. However, we can see how well they're doing and we're very proud of the new parents, Siobhan and David. Thank God for Zoom and FaceTime. Happy birthday to our wonderful daughter, Siobhan, and big hugs, kisses to you today. And please God, we'll meet up again sooner rather than later. Love you lots, Mam and Dad, Deirdre and Brendan O'Sullivan in Selbridge. So we've done that. That was good to do. We're working on CBAs at home. They're part of the new junior cycle. They're projects. Is it constant something assessment? Somebody will fill me in on that. And we were looking. Kate was going, what we do, it's a maths CBA, and she was throwing out ideas and I was throwing out ideas. And anyway, it reminded me of a thing we did years ago. Somebody sent us in a question and they were saying, if you were to get everybody in the world into one space, how much space would you need? See, it's an interesting question, isn't it? So I thought to myself, well, let's do it socially distanced. So I got out the calculator the other night. Look, this is the life. It's a mad life I lead. So there are 7.8 billion people in the world. And to keep everybody socially distant, you would need them all in squares of 2 by 2 metres. So they'd be in the middle and they'd have a metre there and a metre. So everybody would be socially distant by 2 metres, right? So 2 by 2, that's... So they'd be in 4 metres squared. That'd be the area you'd need for each person. Now you're thinking, how much area, like what sort of area would it take, sort of all of Asia, would it take all of Australia, maybe Greenland, to fit the 7.8 billion people on planet Earth, socially distant, how much space? Well, I can tell you now, after my calculations, and I've checked them a few times, because you should never do calculations on air, because usually you get them wrong. Anyway, you would need 31,200 square kilometres. And to give you an idea of that, the area of Ireland is 84,421 square kilometres. So you would fit all the people on planet Earth, socially distance, into Leinster and Connacht. And you'd have room to spare. So there, how about that? You can take that away with you. Maybe check it and see if it's correct. 51551, ray@rte.ie. I wanted to be a fire engine. Sally from Home and Away and Ray from the Den. So you wanted to be a fire engine, Sally from Home and Away and Ray from The Den. That's a good combination there. If I'd followed my childhood dream, I'd be Joanna Donnelly now. That's from Dave in Dublin. Always wanted to be a meteorologist. When I was five, I wanted to be the guy that put the coal into the coal bags. See, that's brilliant, isn't it? The innocence of childhood. That's Brendan from Cork. And I'm from Cork. I've asked my wife to bring my ashes to the source of the Lee. Drop me in and I'll float away through Cork one last time. That's a nice one, isn't it? They say, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. I wanted to be a rock star like Elvis. Can't sing a note, says Tom in Cork. And my brother wanted to be a horse. Oh, I love that. Yeah. I'm so sorry he didn't, as I could have left him out in the field. Catherine, that's great. Yeah, he wants to be a horse. Yeah, like, and I'm sure, like, that's a very modest ambition, isn't it? To be the man who put the coal into the coal bags. And now when you ask children, they want to be professional footballers or influencers or pop stars or whatever. Back in the day, it was a lot simpler. A priest or a doctor. Or a fire engine, or a horse. 51551, ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. Desmond Dekker, and you can get it if you really want on RTE Radio 1, 51551, or ray@rte.ie. Thanks for that little dance tune at the start, says Jean. I shuffled my way up to the clothesline with my headset on, listening to the radio. If the neighbours were looking out their windows, they'd have thought I'd lost the plot. Best regards. I wonder, should we start the show every day with a bit of a dance? And even if I don't play it out, I should do it when I come into the studio. Just put on something loud and dance around the place. Get limbered up. CBA in our house means can't be arsed. Got to laugh when you said it in terms of the children's and learning. And if I follow my dream, I would have been a professional ice skater, says Joan. Actually, I put CBA into Google and can't be arsed came up. What it really means in the context of the junior cycle is classroom-based assessment. Of course, there's always going to be something like that, isn't there? Remember when you were doing the intercert and everyone's going, are you doing the intercourse? You doing the intercourse? Oh, so puerile. So puerile. Now, my son announced when he was about three that he wanted to be a sat-nav when he grows up. Well, there is a sat-nav voice, isn't there? Yeah. My 14-year-old doing his English CBA and doing it on Trump. He wanted me to order a Trump wig on Amazon because he's presenting it after the Easter break. He thought this could help his marks, but I've more sense than him, obviously, and said no, says Ashley in Cork. That's the thing about the CBA is they have to present them then, which is good training in public speaking. I wanted to be a fortune teller, but there was no future in it. Hey, man, Sean. Maybe a comedian? No. I always dreamed of being a primary school teacher since the age of five. Played school every day, reached my dream, taught for 37 years and loved every minute of it. My dream came true, says that person. I wanted to be a daddy and a car designer. I have three beautiful girls and I can drive a car, says Regan. I'm 58, started ballroom dancing, got my cousin involved. Our teacher Ruth had brought so much joy, fun, fitness and laughter into my life. She now does a Zoom dance class and little social distance dances over lockdown. When you're down, dance just lifts the spirits and helps the mind. It does loads of things, dance does. And we're going to talk to Dr. Dance after 4 o'clock. My childhood dream was to be primary teacher from the time I started school. Dreams do come true. Now working as primary teacher, says that person, no name on it. Our quiz of today. Yes, thank you. Today, 25th of March, nearly at the end of the first quarter, as they say in business circles. The first quarter. Q1 is nearly finished. Anyway, yes, we've cobbled together 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years. And we're looking for two people to come on and answer 5 questions each. And our prize today comes courtesy of Electric Ireland, who want to help us all be smarter about how we manage our energy usage. And with the launch of their smart meter price plans, they're going to help us do just that. All you have to do is search Electric Ireland Smart Meters to find out more. And thanks to our friends in Electric Ireland, the person who wins our quiz of today will get for themselves a 50-inch HD Smart TV. Whoa. Yeah. Yeah. But first, you have to answer a qualifying question. So we're looking for two people after 4 o'clock to take part. And here's the qualifying question. In which Irish county would you find the town of Buncrana? Which Irish county would you find the town of Buncrana? 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. Good luck with that. We could be talking to you after 4 o'clock.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
5 on 551. I wanted to be a barrister from the age of 12, 13 in the early 1970s and didn't have the opportunity because I had to leave school 6 months before my leaving cert to help out by taking a job. 9 years ago, I started studying law and qualified as a barrister in 2016. Happy out, Gerry Kennedy and Kinsealy. You can do the maths on that. So 12, 13, the early 70s, qualified in 2016. Do the maths on that. Years ago, I got chatting to a guy in a bar in Birmingham. He told me he worked in a factory putting the little black plastic things into cigarette lighters that make the flame bigger and smaller. I thought this was so interesting and chatted to him for ages about it. Hours later, after we went on a pub crawler in Birmingham, he admitted he was an English teacher. He thought that was too boring a job to tell me. We built a strong friendship that lasted for years, helped along by his humour and my gullibility. Very good. Doing a kitchen tidy, found a little bottle of bubbles in the dresser. No little children in here in a good while. Bubbles still in working order, as I found out. As much fun as dancing when in the mood. Yeah, bubbles and dancing. You can do both together. That's Betty and Leash, who loves dancing. And I wanted to be an elevator technician, but it's wrong for me on so many levels. I'm Brenton. I told everyone I was going to be a comedian. They all laughed. They aren't laughing now. the old ones aren't always the best. Okay, Lismore played Abbeyside in the semi-final, Waterford Hurling semi-final back in August of 2020. And have a listen to this bit of commentary from WLR Kieran O'Connor, or even WLR's Kieran O'Connor. Here we go.
Looking for the brother, the gone aside. There's a goal chance on here. Must be goal for Lismore. They have a chance. Back at the net for the black and amber. They wanted a good start. We played just 3.5 minutes. Long direct ball. Got inside the marker and really no chance there for in right there. Brilliant goal there by Oisín O'Gorman. He came on and got one last week. Now he's got another, or two last week, and now he's got another. And of course, the man with just one kidney, but he's playing as if he has more than even two at this stage. Granddad Massey Walsh will be happy with that one.
There you go. Teenager Oisín O'Gorman, the man with one kidney, is on the line, and so too is his dad, Kieran O'Gorman. How are you doing, lads?
Not too bad, how are you?
There you go, Oisín. There's an introduction for you, huh?
sure. We'll take it.
You'll take it, I'm sure you will. Now, even amazing story, and we were there at the start, because Kieran, we were down in Lismore doing an outside broadcast years ago. I think we were on the Feel Good Tour. And we went around the audience and we said to people, what's making you feel good? And your answer at the time, this was back in what year?
2009.
Yeah. And your answer was?
That I was just asked to be notified that I was a match and that I would be able to donate one of my kidneys to Oisín.
Right. That was a big phone call, wasn't it, you got?
I was. It was brilliant because I just meant that he got his life back because, like, he was 7 years of age. It was no life from, like, he was travelling to Dublin 3 days a week.
Yeah.
Getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, up to Dublin, get his dad to come home. Well, that was his decision. He wants to go early so he'd be home in time to play a bit of hurling with his friends. Yeah. So we just go early to be home early.
Yeah. So Oisín, when you were that age, you probably dreamt of playing for your county, down in the blue and white?
Definitely, yeah, I suppose. Back then, just to even get back playing hurling, get back into school would have been brilliant, yeah. But no, all going well now since, thank God.
Yeah, well, bring us back then to that. You were on your bike.
Yeah. Just back in school, I was just after starting first class and came home without playing and went along the footpath and kind of came off the curb and the bike hopped off the ground and say the handlebar came in and got me in the stomach but didn't go through the skin.
Right.
But straight away, I kind of knew something wasn't right. I was in wicked pain now. And I just remember my brother Fionn being looking at me in kind of pure shock. And I just told him, go in and get the babysitter. And next thing, I'm over in the doctor. And after that, I'm in the ambulance going to Arkeen.
Yeah. And Kieran, you were in the ambulance as well, but you weren't too fussed.
No, I suppose I wasn't really. I didn't. I had no clue how serious it was. I was actually on the phone on the way down the ambulance trying to sell tickets for the All-Ireland final on the following Sunday.
Right. Did you get tickets in the end?
We did, but we didn't get it. Myself and O'Sheen watched on Little Portville in Cumnan Street Hospital.
Yeah, it was probably the best way to watch it.
I was, yeah. But O'Sheen didn't want, O'Sheen fell asleep after 5 minutes.
Right. Because Waterford were well beaten by Kilkenny that time, yeah, yeah. So you weren't fine, and then you went to Ard Kyn Hospital. Doctor came out and said that O'Sheen's kidney was damaged.
Yeah, he said that he'd have to remove the kidney, that he couldn't save, that the artery was cutting the kidney, and we said, okay, so look, he has two, we'll be fine, it's fine, he'll manage away, and one, people can function with one kidney.
Yeah.
And, but then the bombshell came 20 minutes later when the surgeon came out and said, I'm awfully sorry, he said that he was only born with one kidney, that the second kidney had never developed. So that was it. The world was turned upside down. Everything off to Dublin. Poor Fionn was shifted from pillar to post. Fionn was only four.
And Kieran, you had no hint that he was operating on one kidney prior to that?
None whatsoever.
Which is proof positive that you can operate on one kidney, I suppose.
Well, sure, like, four of us are proof now we can operate on
one kidney. Yeah. You've given away the story now. No, I'm joking. It was in the promo. So up to which hospital then?
Crumlin first, and then the day after the 2008 Ireland final, he went to Temple Street, and that became his home from early September till nearly the end of October before he was home. And then after that, it was up and down 3 days a week,
right,
for his dialysis under the brilliant care of Dr. Atifa Wan in Temple Street and all the staff there in St. Michael's Seaward. It was like a home from home. They were brilliant, and anyone that ever has a child in Temple Street, I'm sure, would say the same thing.
Yeah. What are your memories, O'Sheen, from back then?
I suppose that I was so young, I didn't really know what was going on. I suppose I was kind of home and then being shifted up to the Alice's before I really knew that something was wrong, But I suppose I had that escape, being able to come home, go to school, go training, that it was an escape from dialysis. But it was very tough at the same time, but I was lucky I had that escape as well. And that I was so young, I didn't know the full extent of what was going on.
You weren't good at following rules back then either, were you?
No, not at all.
What are the rules around dialysis?
Because I had no kidneys at all, I had no way of removing waste, so I was put on strict fluid restrictions, and I could only have, say, a litre a day.
Right.
But you'd be left off in school then, and next thing, can I go to the toilet down underneath the tap to take a drink?
and that means you had to have extra dialysis, did it? Is that what happens?
Yeah, there was often a Sunday of Dad was tearing up the road to get me into dialysis because I was after sneaking extra fluid over the weekend.
Chancer. So then, Kieran, when was the chat then about getting a kidney?
I suppose the chat straight away, I suppose we discussed straight away, myself and Jennifer, and we just said, look, we both get tested. We spoke to the doctors about it, would it be possible for a live donor, and both of us got tested, and it turned out then that I was a match. So we took it from there, and then on the 23rd of June 2009, the transplant happened.
Yeah. We spoke to you on that day or the day before. You were in Beaumont.
I was in Beaumont, yeah, and O'Sheen was in Temple Street, yeah.
Right, and talk us through what happened.
I was brought down early in the morning, brought down 9 o'clock in the morning down to theatre, and O'Sheen then wasn't brought to theatre until the kidney had been removed from me in Temple Street, so
right.
He was brought down to theatre then, and then I was brought across by motorcycle to Temple Street.
So your kidney travelled across the city?
Yeah.
Right. All right, yeah. And were you out for the count? You were.
Oh yeah.
It's a big operation, isn't it?
It is a big operation, yeah. But look, it's all worth it. It's all worth it. And anybody that's thinking about it, it's amazing. It's the best thing you could do to give life back to your child. You know, giving back their proper life. So if anyone has an opportunity to do it, it's not a nice thing to have to do because it means you have a sick child. But it's just, and the importance, it's brilliant. It's a brilliant thing to do, And it just not everyone is as lucky as Oisín that to have a family member that is a match, and there is people waiting on dialysis list. So I would encourage people to carry the donor card, and this is, that's what this chat is really about, isn't it?
To get awareness out there. It's such a selfless act of love, giving your kidney to your son.
Ah, sure, look, I wouldn't look at it that way. Sure, like,
you're a typical Irish man. I sure know what it is. I just gave my
kidney. No, I wouldn't. Like, you would do the same thing tomorrow morning, right?
Well, I would. Yeah, I would. You know, I'd like to think I would. Yes,
yeah,
I'd like to
you would.
So, kidney brought across from Bowman to Temple Street on the back of a motorcycle, and you get it. And then even when you get the transplant then, Oisín, it's not straightforward, is it? It's not a given that it's going to take.
No, I had complications anyway. Dad's kidney was like a rugby ball, the surgeon described it as.
You see, and of course you were just a little 7-8-year-old.
Yes, seven. Next thing, back into surgery a few days later, wasn't right. I went mad the Sunday night, don't know what was going on, back into theatre on Monday. And then we were okay after that, thankfully. Had to spend a month in hospital, but...
Yeah.
We were all plain sailing after that.
And how much do you understand about the positioning of the kidney? Did they remove the other one, or did they leave it in, or what happens?
I presume they removed the other one. I'm not sure.
They removed it.
You didn't know to this day. Like, you didn't know. And your dad's kidney isn't where your kidney would normally be, is it?
No, it's in my stomach. It's at the front, say, because your kidneys would normally be behind you. My kidney's in my stomach, say.
Right, okay. Dr. Atif then was saying, you know, you're healthy enough to go back to school, but there's one proviso.
Yeah, I kicked up a fuss. I remember the day he told me, and he said, I'm not going back if I can't play hurling.
Right.
And next thing, he's like, you'll have to get protection or something. And myself and Dad took off down the town into a sports shop and found the thickest kickboxing vest we could find.
Right.
Back up to Atif to make sure it was A1. Yeah, he was happy enough. Next thing, first day back in school, Principal Sean Pender said, we won't have any hurling today, he'll ease you back into it. And next thing, I was ringing home saying I felt sick, but in reality it's because we'd no hurling.
So you live for hurling?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Because you only have one, and that's the thing, isn't it? So if you damage that one, you're sort of pretty effed.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. So you strength to strength. How long did your recovery take, Kieran?
It was June, about 3 months. Yeah, 3 to 4 months. Yeah, it's fairly major operation. But sure, look, you don't. Once you see him getting better, you get better yourself. Yes,
And you know, 12 years on or whatever. How are you now?
I'm fine. No problems whatsoever.
Yeah. Okay.
And see him. He's looking down at me now. I never thought I'd see today, but he's looking down at me, so...
Yeah, you're 6'5", I believe, Oisín.
Yeah, 6'4", 6'5", in around that.
You actually sound tall. Yeah. We spoke to you then again around 2011, the World Transplant Games. Where was that on?
Gothenburg in Sweden.
Right, and what events did you take part in?
Badminton, bowling, running, and the long throw.
Right, and what did you come back with?
3 golds and a silver.
Brilliant. And all of this time then, the hurling was still there, getting better and better. Did you play for the school?
I did, yeah. Sure, anything I could play with, I meant playing, do you know what I mean? School, club, development squads, all that.
Yeah, yeah. And Lismore, then you're on the senior team.
Yeah, going well at the minute. Anyway, hopefully we'll get back soon enough.
And have you represented Waterford?
I was on the minor panel 3 years ago. I was playing, and all going well. Hopefully, in a few years, I might get to go up to the senior team. But just focus on being healthy and being happy playing with Lismore, and just staying healthy now.
What position do you play?
Or sure, anywhere in the forwards, really. Anywhere I'm asked to play, I'll go that way.
There'd be lads like me trying to, you know, jumping up into the air, and you just be 2 feet in the ground, just reach up and pluck the slitter out of the air. There you go, lads. Back of the net.
If If it was only it was that easy.
So yourself and Fionn, there's another good part of the story, because Fionn is how many months younger than you?
14 months younger.
Right. And Kieran, what was the was the decision made early on that they would go to the same class?
Yeah. The decision was that Oshie went to play school, and then then Fiona started to play school the second year and give Oshin the second year in play school and then go on and start school. But Oshin was bored the second year in play school, so we asked Sean Pendergast, which is, he was the principal in the primary school at the time, a friend of mine, and I said, could we start the two of them together? And he said, send them on up. He said, we look after them. But Fiona couldn't actually start for 2 weeks after the rest of them because he wasn't actually four until the 11th of September.
Right.
Yeah, so...
So he was always the youngest in the class then, Fionn?
Yeah.
Because my birthday is the 1st of September, so I would have started, you know, just turned four. Yeah.
There's no fear of Fionn.
Yeah. And how has that worked out for you, Oisín, the two of you in the same class, although you're not twins?
It has its positives and its negatives, I suppose.
Hmm.
If you were missing a bit of homework here, you'd get it off him like that, but if there was ever a row, you wouldn't get the homework that way, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And where are you at now, the two of you? Whereabouts are you?
Two of us in Mary doing arts.
Right. Both again, so you're going to same third level.
Yeah, can't get away from each other.
Yeah. How has that been? Have you been over to Limerick at all?
We moved up, but next thing, got an email saying we wouldn't be on campus, so we came down because with me being high risk, I said I wouldn't go up, and Fionn said... wouldn't be fair for him to be going up and come back on weekends. So we both stayed down.
Right. I'll get back to the high risk in a minute, but what's the plan then? Is it primary or secondary school? Which is Mary Eye?
Primary, hopefully.
Right. Okay, that's the aim.
Yeah.
So high risk, have you got a vaccine? Have you got?
Yeah, I was vaccinated 2 weeks ago. I got my first dose.
Right. How did that feel?
Grand, yeah. I wasn't sick at all, thankfully.
Hmm.
But it takes the worry aspect away, I suppose.
Yes, yeah. So it's the Irish Kidney Association Donor Week next week. And as you said earlier on, Kieran, you're encouraging people to have the conversation and ticket on the driver's license or carry a card. And the big thing, I suppose, is the conversation with your family, because even if you've ticked the box on the driver's license and even if you carry a card, ultimately... your next of kin will have to decide if your organs are given on to save lives.
Yeah, it's important for people to have the child. If that's what their decision is, it's important that their next of kin knows what their wishes are. So, it's not a nice thing to be thinking of, I suppose, really, what's going on, but like, it is important to people.
Yeah. Oisín, just before we let you go, have you fine-tuned your protection? Or are you still wearing a kickboxing vest?
Fine-tuned, all right. We found a fella on the internet, Evo Shield, above an Offaly, and we called him and he moulded the guard to my stomach and it stitched into his skin now and it just fits on perfectly.
Right. And you wear that when you're training and playing. And the reference there by Kieran O'Connor, Tomasi Welch, or is it Walsh or Welch? For Kieran,
Massey Welch, yeah, that's his grandfather, yeah.
Ah, right. And did he play for Waterford?
He did, yeah.
Right, and just to finish off the story, and this is going to be painful enough for you, Oisín. So you're there. You've had the accident off the bike. You're up in Crumlin Hospital. It's the day after the All Ireland final. What happens?
Well, I fell asleep first, anyway.
Yeah.
I don't really remember, to be honest.
Right, well, maybe you'll tell that part of the story, Kieran.
Yeah, he got a visit from Brian Cody, Henry Shefflin and Michael Kavanagh. He was delighted at the time.
Yeah.
And Davy Fitz was the Waterford manager at the time, and he actually came over to visit him as well.
Did he? Right.
He did.
That means an awful lot, doesn't it?
People do these things and they're great, and it's a great lift for people. Like Oisín, he was happy at the time. like, because he was hurling mad, and for these people to come in and say hello to him, it was nice.
Even if they'd beaten you the day before.
Even if they'd beaten you before. But look, these things happen, and that's the GA, that's the GA family. What happens between the white lines, stay between the white lines, and we're friends afterwards.
Right. How are Lismore doing this year? Is there any games going on?
There's nothing going on at the moment, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, listen, thanks so much for taking time out to tell us your story again. And we'll talk again in 12 years' time or so.
Hopefully. Right. Ray, just before we go, can I just a quick hello to someone there. Nora Welsh, a friend of mine in Lismore. And on the 12th of May, she will be 40 years after having a kidney transplant.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's just to finish on a... It's a positive note that organ donation works.
They're just... Every story I hear is as spectacular as the previous one. And the fact that you gave your son life by giving him your kidney, you know, like, that's just so amazing. It blows my mind every time. It does. I know. It's thinking nothing to you, Kieran, and it probably doesn't, you know, you don't give it a second thought. But when I hear things like, just amazing, just amazing. So thanks so much for talking to us today. Thanks, Oisín. Mind yourself.
Thanks, Ray.
Yeah, see you, Kieran. Mind yourself. Bye, see you. Bye, 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 bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Owen has been on. Great to listen to Oisín and Kieran. Oisín was a pleasure to teach in school and not a bad old hurler either. Moshiv, says Owen McGrath. And I remember Oisín's grandfather, Mossy Walsh, playing for Waterford hurlers in the late 70s and early 80s, says Martin. Lovely story. Big shout out and congratulations to Pat Walsh from Carlow, who's celebrating 10 years since his kidney transplant. Please remind everyone about Organ Donor Awareness Week and to have the discussion with their loved ones about organ donation. Thanks. Well, we've done that. But we're happy to do it again and again and again. Stage 4 kidney disease. I'm going to be going for a kidney and pancreas transplant, and just at the early stage of getting all the tests and things in order. My sister wants to go as my kidney donor, but I'm a bit reluctant, but hearing the story has given me some hope today. Thanks. That's Will. Oh, that's nice, isn't it? On the line we have Ray O'Neill, psychoanalyst, and Alison Keaton, psychologist, here to give you advice on your relationship woes. How are you doing, Ray?
Hi, Ray. All well, thank God.
Good. How are you doing, Alison?
I'm very good. How are you?
Good. Firstly, just let's do an overview of where we are as a nation with the lockdown and the pandemic. And we've discussed this before, but it is difficult when you can see the end, but you still have a bit of work to do, isn't it, Ray?
Well, yeah, that was the thing, like, given where we are, there's a finishing line in sight. And this is the metaphor of the marathon runner, because my God, have we been in a long distance run this length of time, is that idea that around the 20th or the 21st mile, when you're about 80% the way there, suddenly the mind collapses and the body follows. We're hitting that wall as a country because we can see life after COVID, but it's just not coming to us as quickly as we want. And I think it would be good for people and the government to bear that in mind, that exhaustion.
Yeah, and as you say, our reserves are at an all-time low, and that's a problem, isn't it?
It is, and this is where, again, you know, it's a tight balance, but it has to be balanced, that in terms of restriction, but also giving people, you know, some kind of relief or some kind of release that doesn't risk too much, but allows us to be more human.
Mm. Yeah, it's just, it's risky, and it's a very difficult thing. Like, you see what happened at Christmas? We all know what happened after that. So it's very difficult. I think, and I say it in my head on loop, this will pass. We will get to the other side. And that keeps me going. But obviously that's not enough for everybody.
Well, there is an end in sight. And that's where we have to draw our strength. And that's where we have to draw our comfort. And particularly for those people who are really lost, this will end.
Okay. And Alison, how are you with seeing the end but not getting to the end?
Well, like Ray's saying, I don't think the reserves are low. I think they're actually empty and we're kind of on fumes at the moment. So with that in mind and kind of recognising what needs to be done to get over that finish line, you definitely have to ask yourself, what can you do to kind of repair and rest. And something I've said to people is to try the deer challenge where you drop everything and rest and do that every day. Now, that could be a cup of tea, Ray. It could be as small as that, but right. that you're building in some time. Because I just think, you know, for some people, it's been a very busy time, you know, with work and kind of the juggle of home and work. So I think people are very overstimulated and exhausted kind of physically and emotionally. So like Ray's saying, I think the importance of kind of recognizing we're not there yet, but kind of actively engaging in things such as rest to kind of help get us to where we need to be.
Okay, right. And we will get there. We will get there. So these are some of the problems that came in for you, Ray and Alison. So we'll go to the first one. Dear Ray and Alison, I'm desperate. Oh, no, I'll do the second one first, actually. Dear Alison, my family make me feel like a freak because I don't have children. I'm 37. My husband and I are very happy together and we plan to stay exactly as we are. What upsets me is that my family, example, my brother and sister, seem to think I'm somehow anti-children. Recently, even my four-year-old niece asked, do you not like me? I found that distressing and unfair as I've tried to be generous and loving. How do I counter this criticism? Alison.
So I think it's just recognising that the culture in Ireland is very family based, but that doesn't mean that everybody has to follow that. And I think people can be quite obtrusive and intrusive about people's life choices, and especially in this situation when they're actually really happy and they're in a good place. And I think it's a real judgment. But often I think it's just a projection, you know. So maybe for the brother and the sister, I know this doesn't help the person who has kind of wrote into us, but what's going on for them that they actually feel that this person's life isn't complete without children? What's going on, you know, for them? So It's not that you can't counter the criticism, but definitely to acknowledge that when you hear from a little voice who's four, why don't you like me? That perhaps you're worried that they have heard this from the brother and the sister. And that's what really helps. I would go back and say to them, I absolutely, you know how much I love my nieces and nephews, but this is a choice that we've made. And to put in some boundaries and some respect that it's, I think it's a wonderful choice if you say, I don't want to have children. Because many people have children and perhaps it's not the right thing to do. They didn't actually want it or it's not good for the children. So I think it's one of the most mature things that you can actually do if you know that you don't actually want to have children and you don't feel under pressure to actually not bow down to that pressure.
Ray?
I think behind so much prejudice and intolerance is a huge envy, whether that's racism or homophobia or misogyny. And for this caller to be aware that behind her brother and sister's nastiness, because it is petty and nasty, is probably an envy that she's having a different kind of life, a different kind of relationship, and certainly a different set of freedoms to her to the brother and sister in their couplings. So again, as Alison says, I would, you know, with the child, certainly reassure them. I don't know how much you're going to convince people that have taken on that level of prejudice. And I don't know how much I'd involve myself in trying to convince them.
It's an interesting thing, though, because I'm finding it increasingly in my life that if you try and understand people who are causing you problems and try and empathise with them, and it's not something you naturally do because they can be nasty to you. But if you try and do that, it makes it easier. And because you usually find, as you've just said there, that these people, there's something missing from their lives. Their problem is theirs, not yours.
Mm.
You know?
Mm.
You know that old thing about, you know, what people think about you is none of your business.
It can still hurt though, doesn't it?
Yes, I know. But anyway, hope that works out and good luck with it. Now, my partner's meanness is seriously beginning to affect our relationship. He's constantly moaning about lights being left on and the food I buy. And he's getting worse with age. If he's not looking on the internet for cheap deals, he's telling me how I can economise by buying cheaper clothes. I don't want to live like this, and it has gotten worse with the lockdown. I work 40 hours a week, so why shouldn't I have the occasional long hot soak in the bath or treat myself online to some nice clothes? How do I stop myself from losing it with him? Alison.
Look, I think we're so terrified of being angry sometimes, and anger is such a kind of functional emotion, and it's when we feel there's something wrong. I just think a conversation needs to be had here that you know, there's a value here, a value difference, and meanness, if that's something that, you know, you find very difficult, it can be quite destructive within a relationship, because that sense of kind of anger can then turn into resentment if you're working very hard. Perhaps I think what's happening is that with kind of being in each other's company all the time, that perhaps the spending is more visible. It's just a conversation.
Yes, yes.
Needs to be had. And they may have to agree to disagree, as long as it's not, you know, she's saying she works 40 hours a week. So, you know, it's about valuing. And in terms of money, it's always about what the value is about, really. And it's about how you want to live your life. And there may just be differences here that perhaps you're seeing. But it can be a very unattractive trait, and can be quite destructive if you feel like, gosh, they're mean, not just financially, but even in spirit, that they don't kind of let me kind of buy within reason, you know.
Yes.
If you're not buying Gucci, but if you're buying a couple of things online, that it's kind of taking the joy
out of spontaneity,
you know.
Yeah. Ray, what do you think?
Yeah, again, I think the three of us are of that generation where the, you know, leaving the immersion on was the seventh deadly sin. And so we kind of come from that culture, and I have no idea how old this particular person is. Frugal. And that frugality can so easily become meanness. And meanness is ugly. And so it's not just what's being budgeted here, but there's a certain ugliness in which the person writing is hearing from the partner, you don't deserve a long hot soak, or you don't deserve some nice clothes. And so for her to feed back to him, look, when you say these things to me, this is what I'm hearing, I think might shift what's happening for both of them.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? And I know in a lot of surveys that one of the top three things that couples fight over is money. And we come from, you know, and you can end up with somebody come from different backgrounds, and your attitude to money can be different. And that's, you know, that's, you have to work at that. It's a compromise. It's a difficult one. I'm sure it's a thing that's echoed around the country. People will be saying, oh, that's me.
With all the deliveries coming to the door, you know.
But it's interesting what you said at the outset, Alison, that people are more aware of their partner spending now. Because it is that, you know. And
oh, that's it. Ding dong.
And somebody has that excited look on their face, and next it's a big box from Amazon Prime or whatever. Yeah, with Amazon Prime. Yeah, okay. She needs to have the chat before it sort of explodes into anger.
That'll ripple quite dramatically.
Okay. Ray, thanks very much. Mind yourself. Alison, thank you. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Ray.
Bye now. Bye,
thanks,
bye,
guys.
Bye, bye, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And there's somebody to 51551. Yeah, but what if that lady is bad with money and he is sensible, not mean? Well, I suppose, you see, it's perception, isn't it? And one person's been sensible with money is another person been mean with money. And that's the problem. They have to chat it out. And work it out. Now, an Ishtosh and the Free Skeleton and Notil, a court to Wallish. Grandmaga Court, thank you very much. 51551 Ray at RT.ie. Now, regarding the husband's meanness towards his wife, the way for her to tackle him is to write to him. It's non-confrontational and peaceful and solves a world of problems. The pen is mightier than the sword, or than the harsh word, for that matter, says Lawrence. Yeah, I read that years ago in one of those self-help books. And even if it's not a letter, if you write down what you have to say and then have the chat with the person, but then you're reading from the page. So it sort of breaks down the harshness of it. You don't have to make eye contact because you're looking at the page and you have it all laid out there. So you just read your own words to the person. And that's a good way of doing it. Or maybe just write a letter, as Lauren suggests. I hope you're well. We are. I was just wondering if you have a chance today, could you please wish my nanny well? Her name is Marjorie Moore. She's from Kildare and she just had a new hip put in on Tuesday. She listens every day and it would mean the world to her to hear her name on the radio. She lives just outside Kildare town and has done so much for the town over the years. Yes, Ray, that Marjorie Moore. Oh, I know Marjorie Moore. We are missing her loads and can't wait to have her home again soon. She's the best nanny in the whole world. Kind regards from all of her grandchildren, Aoife, Tom, Elijah, Ewan and Evan. Get well soon, Marjorie. And good luck with the new hip. Well may you wear, as they say, down those parts of the country. Here we go. Yes. Now, our quiz of today. Today, 25th of March. And our prize today comes courtesy of Electric Ireland. They want us to tell you about Electric Ireland smart meters. And you can search for them on the Google machine and you'll find out all about them. And thanks to our friends at Electric Ireland, whoever wins today will get a brand new 50-inch HD smart TV for themselves. Hello, Jackie Deering.
Hello, Ray Darcy.
How are you?
Great, thanks. Delighted to talk to you.
Yeah, great to talk to you. You're a Waterford woman living in Castledermot.
That's it, yeah. Came up here and met a man and stayed.
Right, and is he a Kildare man?
He is indeed, yeah, yeah. He is indeed, Harry.
I always felt that Castledermot was nearly Carlow.
You know? Very near it, yeah. I could walk to the border now
Yeah, there you go.
Break for the border.
Yeah, break for the border, yeah. What part of Waterford did you live in?
Dunmore East.
And you left
Dunmore East? By the sea.
You left Dunmore East for Castledermot. All right.
I did. God almighty. Mortal sin, wasn't it?
I'm not saying nothing. I'm not saying anything.
I know. Yeah. We will be back there. Don't worry.
Yeah. That's the plan, is it?
Well, we'll be able to take our trips down there very soon.
Yeah. So you retired to help your hubby, Harry?
Yeah, he had an operation last year and I retired from my job to care for him.
How is
he
now?
Great, yeah, he's great. He's up and about and out every day. We've plenty to do here.
Great.
We have a sun building beside us at the moment, so there's plenty to do on site and everything.
Right, that's son Ricky. So that's
Ricky,
great.
Yeah.
So has he got family?
He has two girls, Saoirse and Blanet. Saoirse is nearly 8 and Blanet is 2 and a bit.
So literally beside you, Jackie?
Yeah, like in the country, like a site beside us.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, it's great. We're so looking forward to it now.
Yeah,
it's
loads of reasons. The company, the grandchildren, you know, and as you get older as well, there's somebody beside all those things. Great. Yeah,
and it'll be an advantage to them, I'm sure, as well.
Oh, babysitting, yeah. Oh, yeah, because you can do it, you know, 6:30 on a Saturday evening. Do you feel like going out, Pet? Yeah, Ricky, I do. Yes.
Oh, I'll ring Granny up. Or shout up.
Yeah. And Niamh, your daughter, got married to Brian during lockdown. When exactly?
She did the 20th of November.
Right.
And we had 25 and we had a great day.
Great.
So it's well advised for anybody having a rethink.
And would they plan now something bigger at the other end or not?
We don't know
yet.
Okay. Yeah, or they don't know yet.
Right.
Yeah, they don't know.
Great.
They just don't know the way things are going. Yeah.
Right.
The way things are.
Now, you're up against Bridget Keogh from Dunabate in Dublin. How are you doing, Bridget?
Good, thank you. Great.
You were listening to Oisín there and Ciarán talking about donating kidneys and dialysis and all that. And
that's
right. You're on dialysis yourself?
I am, yeah, for the last 5 years.
And is it home dialysis?
Yeah, it is. I was very lucky, actually, because with the COVID and that, you know, so I was on home dialysis. I've been on home dialysis for the last 2 years.
Right.
You know, so that's actually, you know, it's actually working out great because you can have it, because I work full time, so you can have it whenever it suits you. You just go up the stairs and do it and that's it.
That was my next question, like, when do you do it? So it's whenever you like.
Yeah, you can do it whenever you like. Like, obviously, you have to do it, you know, you have to do so many hours a week. So
yeah.
I do 4 hours Monday, Wednesday and Friday, and then Saturday afternoon I just do a little top up, another 3 hours.
So you do 4 hours each of those days?
Yeah, 4 hours on Monday night, Tuesday, Wednesday night, Friday night and then Saturday afternoon.
So what are you, 15 hours a week, is it, or so around that?
Yeah, it's 15 hours, that's right.
15 hours a week, wow.
Mm.
Yeah, but you can read a book
me
or
alive
listen.
Anyway,
yeah, exactly. Yes, yeah. You can read a book or watch Netflix or whatever.
Oh, yeah, sure. Watch the telly, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's grand. You
yeah.
know, it's fine.
Yeah. Who's at home with you?
Well, I have my husband, he's at home, and I have my daughter, Stephanie, my youngest, and she is, but both of them are actually out at the moment, but the two of them are normally at home.
Right, okay. And where are the rest of the family?
I have 3 sons in America and 3 of them married Texan girls, so unfortunately
they ain't coming back.
They ain't coming back. No.
Yeah.
And they also have I have 3 grandchildren. There were 2 born last year, so I haven't seen them at all. So please God, this year maybe.
And will you go to them or will they come to you?
Well, normally what happens is I go to them and I normally do the dialysis over there. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, no, I carry on. So,
right.
But this year, I just wouldn't feel comfortable.
No, of course you wouldn't. And
you know,
and Bridget, will it ever come to a point where you'll need a kidney?
Oh, I definitely need a kidney.
You will, yes.
And well, you see, I was supposed to be on the transplant list a while ago, but you see, you have to be healthy and you have to be as well as
yes.
possible to be on the transplant list. And I needed to lose weight, and I was just very lazy about losing weight. I just got very comfortable doing it, and I just realised, especially now that, you know, that I realise with my grandchildren and all that, that I really need to be getting my act together.
Right,
so
okay.
Yeah, I'm losing weight. I'm actually about, I think I'm about 3 kilos now I have to lose, and then my consultant is going to put me on the list.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. Well done.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
That's great, so, isn't it?
Keep my mouth shut, no more sweets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I'd say it's difficult, you know, because that 15 hours of dialysis, you want to give yourself an old treat, but it's difficult. It's difficult.
Oh,
right.
It's very difficult for anybody we manage.
Now, Bridget, say hello to Jackie and say good luck to Jackie.
Hello, Jackie, and the best of luck to you.
And that's Bridget there, Jackie.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you, Bridget. Best of luck now.
5 questions
thank
each.
You.
Whoever answers most correctly gets the prize. If it's a draw at the end of that, we go to a tiebreak situation. Good luck, Jackie. Good luck, Bridget. Here we go.
Thank you. Thanks, Ray.
Thanks.
Now, Jackie, first question for you. On this day in 1895, Italian troops invaded Ethiopia. On what continent would you find Ethiopia?
Africa.
Correct answer. Bridget, on this day in 1976, the military government in Argentina banned left-wing political parties. On which continent would you find Argentina?
Argentina, South America.
Yeah, okay, that's it. You're settled in now, both of you. Jackie, second question for you. Have a listen to this.
Just one chance to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Oh, hey! On this day in 1996, at the 68th Academy Awards, that actor you heard won a Best Director Award for his work on Braveheart. Can you name him?
Oh, I knew it was Braveheart. Oh, God. I can see his face paint.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
With the blue
sorry,
on
no.
it. The face with the blue on it. No, screaming. No.
Yeah.
No, not coming to you. Mel
no.
Gibson. Mel Gibson.
Oh, yeah.
He
yeah.
starred in it and directed it. Okay.
Yeah.
Early days. Bridget, second question for you. Have a listen to this.
Like Rosa Diaz, a client of ours, or have their spine deteriorate like Stan Bloom, another client of ours. So before you come back here with another lame-ass offer, I want you to think real hard about what your spine is worth, Mr. Walker.
On this day in 2001, at the 73rd Academy Awards, that actress you heard won a Best Actress Award for a role in Erin Brockovich. Can you name her?
Oh, yeah. I can see her face. Oh, yeah. God. Julia. Julia.
Go on.
Oh, God. What is her second name? Oh, God. That's terrible.
No, I need
Julia.
Her.
Julia.
No.
Oh,
no.
No.
No. Julia Roberts. Julia Roberts.
Oh, for God's
You're
sake.
Kicking
oh,
yourself.
God.
I know. Don't kick yourself. Don't kick yourself.
I'm telling you, actually, they're shouting at the thing, and I realise it's not that easy.
One all. Okay. Third question for you, Jackie. On this day in 2006, yes. protesters demanded a re-election in Belarus following a claimed rigged presidential election. Which of these is the capital city of Belarus? Minsk or Kiev?
Kiev.
No. Kiev is Ukraine, Minsk is Belarus. Now, Bridget, similar question for you. On this day in 2018, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un began a surprise trip to China by train. Which of these is the capital of North Korea? Phnom Penh or Pyongyang?
Pyongyang.
Is the correct answer. Phnom Penh is the capital of Cambodia. Right, so Bridget, you're on 2, Jackie, you're on 1. Still early days. An audio one for you, Jackie. Have a listen to this.
The moment I wake up, before I pull on my makeup, I say a little prayer for you.
On this day in 1942, that American singer-songwriter known as the Queen of Soul was born in Memphis. Can you name her?
Oh, God. It's so easy when you're listening.
I know.
I know, Jackie.
You know Bridget Dio, no. You know the answer, right?
No, I don't know the answer. You don't know the answer. Know how she feels.
Okay, right, right.
Yeah.
So neither of you know the answer. Even, a guess.
I can't even think of the soul singer now at the minute. No, sorry, no.
Aretha Franklin.
All right.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, now you're on one, Jackie. Bridget, you're on two. If you get this correct, Bridget can't catch you. Marek, yeah, I'm right. Okay. Right, Bridget, good luck with this. Have a listen to this. With a thrill in my head and a pill on my tongue, there's all the nerves that have just begun. Listening to mom and all night long. So, on this day in 1960, Steve Norman, saxophone player with that band, was born in London, England. Can you name the band?
That was Tony Hadley. Oh God.
Yeah.
Jesus, I said not the band.
Yeah, it's mad. You know the lead singer, you don't know the band. That's odd, to say the least.
Yeah.
No.
It's gone.
Spandau Ballet.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, true. Brands of Man, yeah. Okay, so now two plays one. Jackie, if you get this right and Bridget gets her final question wrong, then we're into a tiebreak situation. But you have to get this one right to stay in. Good luck. On this day in 2005, American actress Jennifer Aniston filed for divorce from Brad Pitt due to irreconcilable differences. In what year was Jennifer Aniston born? Was she born in 1969, 1972, or 1975?
I'll go with 72.
It was 1969.
Oh,
shit. Will I say it or will you say it? They didn't suit you on the day. No,
God,
there
yeah.
you go. Yeah, 1969. She was 52 on the 11th of February. So there you go.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I remember that.
We'll send you out a Ray Darcy Show mug. We'll send you out two because you have the people moving in next door. So there'll be a run on the mugs. Okay, great talking to you, Jackie. Mind yourself.
Thank you, Ray. Yeah,
see you now.
Bye.
Bridget Keogh in Donabate.
I tell you, Ray, there was a pair of us in it today. There really was. I'll never be complaining again. Myself and Stephanie to be at the radio shouting at the radio, yes. But I tell you, it's a different story when you're doing it.
It is a different story.
You just go blank.
Anyway, the good news for you, Bridget Keogh, is that there is a 50-inch HD smart TV on its way to Donabate to you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, well done.
That's
Mind
brilliant.
Yourself. Great talking to you.
Thank you.
See you now. Bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, clear a space, everybody, because we're about to do a bit of dancing in the company of Dr. Dance. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Dr. Peter Lovett, Dr. Dance.
I was just starting to groove there. I was getting into that groovy, funky bit of a Sir Duke.
Yeah, that's it. Listen, tell people about your background first. I was telling them at the top of the show. So you have a unique CV in that, you know, professional dancer and psychologist. So talk us through it.
That's it. I was a professional dancer first. I was rubbish at school. And dancing helped me overcome a reading difficulty in my early 20s. And then I discovered psychology. I discovered reading and psychology. I did degrees in psychology and then neural computation, so the mathematical modeling of brain functions. I then did my PhD. And then when I was at Cambridge University, I decided to set up a dance psychology lab to use all of my science to look at dancing.
Yes.
And then when I did that, I started off by looking at people with Parkinson's disease. And what we found is that when people with Parkinson's, now this is a neurodegenerative disorder, when people with Parkinson's dance, it leads to an improvement in their medical symptoms, which is really rather extraordinary. So that's where the research into dance really started.
Okay, we'll come back to Parkinson's in a moment, but what's the evolutionary value of dancing, Peter?
Oh, dancing is fantastic. There is no society anywhere in the world where the people don't dance naturally.
Right.
Little tiny babies groove. Now, we know that when people dance together, it bonds societies together. It bonds people together. There's a brilliant study which found that when people move together in time, they afterwards, even complete strangers, report liking each other more. They trust each other more. they feel more psychologically similar and they show more helpful behaviour towards each other, even little tiny children and adults. So dancing bonds societies together. It's fantastic.
Have you seen this? Jerusalem. Have you seen the dances all over the world, people doing this dance?
Oh, no, I haven't.
Oh, it's amazing. Put in Jerusalem into Google when you're finished with us.
Yeah,
It started somewhere in Angola or someplace in Africa. And it came to our attention recently because our police force on Garda Síochána, they started doing it because the Swiss police force threw down the gauntlet and asked them to do it. They've done it in New York, they've done it in Canada. And groups all over the world have got together and danced together to this tune.
It's fantastic.
It's a sort of a funky line dance routine that people can learn very easily. And schools are doing it, and frontline workers are doing it, and it's just, and it's the perfect song as well. I'll play a bit for you. I'll play a bit
Thank
for you.
You.
Here we go. So there's definitely a social element to it, we know that.
There really is.
What happens in the brain then when we're dancing?
Oh, all kinds of things happen in the brain. So, we know, for instance, that people's pain thresholds go up when they dance. So when you dance, it can release opioids in the brain, and that can do all kinds of amazing things. We know that it makes us happy, so we know we're triggering some happy areas of the brain, but we know also these opioid receptors become more active, and that means that people's pain thresholds go up.
Right.
Now, of course, this is fantastic in all kinds of ways, not just for dancing at 3 a.m. in a pair of stilettos, which must be very painful, but also when you're carrying all kinds of pain in your body, then dancing can help relieve some of that pain.
Right. And it's obviously, it's a physical exercise, so that's good. You're getting that part of it in. And then it cheers you up. So there's a dopamine release, but what else is going on?
Oh, well, the cheering up is fantastic. What we know is that when you look at people's moods and emotions after they dance, even if you just get them boogieing for a couple of minutes to a funky tune or any pop tune, and then afterwards their positive mood states go up. So there's an improvement in those happy moods and positive moods, but there's also a decrease in negative moods. So things like anxiety, frustration, fatigue, anger, those emotional states become lower. Now, what's brilliant about that is there's a relationship between people's moods and people's problem-solving abilities. And what some research has found, or we found and other people have found, is that when you improve people's moods through dancing, then their problem-solving becomes more highly tuned. Now, this is great. Imagine all of the problems that you've got, the anxieties you've got, the ruminating about the future, worrying about whether something will happen.
Have you been talking to my wife?
Well, it's brilliant because when you dance, if you dance with your wife, then some of those problem-solving things become clearer.
Yeah.
We find it easier to solve problems. We get more complex solutions to those problems.
Okay. Why we have you on this week is because we spotted an article in the Daily Mail. You have a book out called The Dance Cure, and you're offering people advice during lockdown because you feel that dance can reignite intimacy in relationships that maybe have got a bit of a knocking because of the pandemic.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things the pandemic has done is brought us together. So my wife and I, for instance, I used to be traveling all over the place and we didn't spend much time together in the house because I was always traveling.
Mm.
The lockdown happened and now we've spent virtually an entire year in the same building, which we've almost never done before. Now, of course, that can lead to all kinds of tensions. And while people are together, they then become distant from one another. They start orbiting, moving in different orbits in the same place. And it can lead to frustrations, it can affect intimacy, it can affect all kinds of things. And what we've done, we're using dance to help people come together. So looking at people completely, so looking at the social element, looking at their thinking, looking at their emotions, and looking at them physically, we are able to use dance to help people come together. And we can either improve things like intimacy, frustration, love, a whole range of things we can help people with dancing.
So your advice to people listening today is dance. That's pretty straightforward. But do you start with a fast dance? We used to have this thing in Ireland. I don't know if you had them in England back in nightclubs and discos back in the day. We'd have a slow set.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had them. Yeah, so they'd be dancing away, and next thing the DJ go, and now it's time for a slow set.
Yeah, but you see, the DJ had built up to that all night,
yes,
and so had you.
Yes, yeah.
And that's what we need to do now. So we need to help people find their groove.
Yes.
So you can find your groove all by yourself. That's absolutely
right.
Great.
So I'll put something on here. Here we go. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So find your groove to somebody. Okay. Here we go. You're finding your groove now. Okay. Here we go.
Now this is brilliant.
Go on, talk us through it.
Okay, so now this song is fantastic because it's got a bit of syncopation in there. And the sensory motor coupling area of the brain is taking this music and it's creating movement throughout your body, or an urge to move to your body. And that's your groove. Once you've... Oh, did you hear that?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Now, so lovely. Because once you find your groove together, then you can start finding a groove with another person.
Uh-huh.
Now, you and I, Ray, we could both be dancing to this piece of music.
Yeah.
And we're almost, even though we're in different places, we can synchronize together while we're doing it. Now, imagine doing that, finding that groove. And then you can find the groove with another person.
Yes.
And start to move with them.
Uh-huh.
And then let's imagine your relationship is characterized by frustration and a bit of anger and short-temperedness.
Yes.
Obviously, what you need to bring in is some fun and engagement and enjoyment. And sometimes we can use dance to help people find that joy. We can get people smiling again and making eye contact with each other, as you would in a nightclub or a disco.
And then before you know it...
Now there we are. That's the one. That's the one. And then, of course, when you get to that stage, you can start feeling each other's grooves.
Yes.
And you can get into each other and move together. And then that's when the magic happens.
Okay. Now, for people who are listening and going, I can't dance, I've two left feet, never able to dance, just can't do it. It's embarrassing.
No, there's no such thing as you can't dance. Humans are born to dance. It's like saying you can't be a human. You are a human. If you're a human, you can dance. Everybody, regardless of your perceived abilities, what sort of limbs you've got, you can dance. Everybody can. Once we take away the judgment and the self-consciousness, then we get that natural groove coming through us. And it's as natural as breathing. I mean, literally, humans are born to dance.
Dance, okay. So what do you suggest? You have a sort of a step-by-step approach for people who think they can't dance.
Yes, I do. Well, the first thing we have to do is strip away those anxieties. So we need to find out why you think you can't dance. Now, some people have been told that they can't dance. Sometimes people have been laughed at for their dancing. Some people have gone to a ballet class and been told they're too fat to dance.
Right.
And there's a whole set of reasons why people have been told they can't dance. What we need to do is to work out that we do something called a dancer's lifeline, the Dr. Dance lifeline. We look at people and we work out the positive and the negative experiences people have had with dancing. We find out what their reason is for not dancing, and then we start to address those concerns.
Aha.
Yeah.
And then, is there any little exercise that people can do at home?
Yes. What I would do, if anyone's anxious about dancing, I would get them laying on the bed.
Okay.
And with their eyes closed, they can close the curtains, they can be completely by themselves, and to play a piece of music, any piece of music that they like. And I want them then to connect with that piece of music. And what that means is just find the rhythm in that piece of music. Relax all of your bodies. Go through some kind of progressive muscle relaxation across your body. And then feel the consequence of that music in your body. So feel a part of you twitch. It might be in your thigh, it might be in your tummy or your shoulder. Just feel those muscles moving naturally in a really relaxed way to that rhythm that's inside your head. And then slowly build that up and make it larger and larger and larger. Feel that if you can hear the different rhythms in the music, find the rhythm in your body in different patterns, and then slowly start getting yourself up.
And then you'll be...
Exactly. And now you see, I'd be taking that rhythm. I'd be off the bed and I'd be grooving around the bedroom to that piece of music.
Dr. Peter Lovett, author of The Dance Cure, thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us and dance with us today.
Well, thanks for the groovy session this afternoon,
thanks, Ray. Peter. Thank you.
Bye.
That's it from us. Cormac is on the way on his own and we are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.